Welcome to Technology and the Arts, a bi-weekly podcast exploring the connections between the worlds of technology and art. In this installment, we'll hear from New Jersey singer-songwriter Christian Beach, who is putting the finishing touches on his first solo acoustic CD. Plus, we'll discuss the Technology Entertainment Design, or TED, conference and a recent decision by the Copyright Royalty Board that may threaten the existence of internet radio services. And as usual, we'll share some helpful websites and online resources we have come across recently. We'll talk about all of this and more just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Wednesday, March 21st, 2007. Now here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazny.
Welcome to another edition of the Technology and the Arts podcast. As always, Technology and the Arts seeks to explore the connections between technology and art and to establish a forum for discussing the impact technology has made on the human creative process and on literature, music, and the visual and interactive arts.
And to let you know who we are, my name is Brian Kelly. I'm a journalist by trade, amateur songwriter, musician, and science and technology enthusiast living in central New Jersey.
And I'm John Lemazny, a father, artist, musician, poet, and technologist living in the Mid-Atlantic region.
Taking a look at what's on the palette for this podcast, in our In Perspective segment, we'll look at the annual Technology Entertainment Design Conference, which was held recently in Monterey, California, and a social project called Bum Rush the Charts, which is aiming to catapult a song by an indie band to the number one spot on Apple's iTunes store. Plus, we'll discuss a recent decision regarding royalty rates charged to webcasters that could possibly force many internet radio services, like Pandora, to cease operations. And as usual, we'll share with you some interesting websites and online resources we have discovered lately. Among those we'll be talking about this week will be Lulu.com, which allows you to self-publish and sell books online, and Social Explorer, which provides easy access to demographic information about the United States dating back to 1940. Then, in our dialogue segment, we'll hear from Christian Beach, a singer-songwriter who has been a fixture on the Jersey Shore music scene since the early 1990s. After forming and fronting a few bands that use technology extensively, Christian has stripped down his sound and will soon be releasing a solo acoustic CD influenced by the likes of Hank Williams and Bob Dylan. You'll get to hear him discuss his musical transformation, his new CD, and a special performance he gave for us in his studio. But before we get into all that, John, it's good to see you again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great. What you been up to lately, John?
Well, as part of a Center for Innovative Instruction session at Rider University, I gave a talk about security, online security, internet security, how to remain secure and anonymous online. It was a fantastic talk, and if you're interested, you can check out the materials for the session at ghost.rider.edu/openlearning, all one word, all lowercase. Also, because of the recent snowstorm, I just want to reiterate that I am sick of winter, and that I am very much looking forward to the spring. And finally, I'd like to give another plug for the Princeton Public Library Tuesday Tech Talk series, at which I will be giving a talk on the top 25 Firefox extensions on April 3rd at 7 o'clock. Again, that's at the Princeton Public Library. Anything you'd like to say before we get started?
Yes, I do, John. First of all, I want to thank Greg Taylor of Decoder Ring Theater for promoting our last podcast featuring the interview we did with him on both the Decoder Ring Theater website at decoderringtheater.com and at the very end of the latest Blackjack Justice story, Mixed Blessings, he put in a little plug to for people to come and listen to the interview, listen to our podcast. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Greg.
And some friends of his in the blogosphere also help promote our site as well. So I'd like to thank the Audio Addicts blog at societyfans.blogspot.com and the science fiction and fantasy audio site sffaudio.com for posting information about our podcast. In fact, we have already added links to these sites in our blog roll, so you should see those on the right-hand side of the Technology and the Arts website at techarts.wordpress.com.
We thank you.
Thank you very much. But now, let's turn to our In Perspective segment. This is where we discuss recent headlines, hot topics, or helpful and interesting websites we have discovered recently. John, what would you like to put in perspective for our listeners this week?
Thanks, Brian. I want to bring to your attention some things I found. First, there is the DIY music box kit from ThinkGeek.com. ThinkGeek has a lot of fantastic toys and gifts for your favorite geek. This one is unique in that you can make your own music box and have it play music that you create using a strip of paper. So, for example, if you go to the link that we provide, you'll see that somebody has made the theme for Mario Brothers, and they sit there and play it out. It's a fantastic little toy. I can't wait to get my hands on one. I'd also like to talk about grid systems and web design. Grid systems have been around for a very long time. Anybody who has ever taken a class in graphic design probably has endured a presentation on grids. They're essentially, any good magazine layout has a grid system in place so that one page looks very similar in structure to another page. And this particular site brings the idea into web design. And any great web designer has probably thought about grid systems for making their pages sensibly, cohesively designed using a grid system. Lulu.com is a way to self-publish and to promote and to sell books without having to worry about whether or not an editor is interested, without having to worry about whether or not the public is interested. And so if you have a great idea for a book, Lulu.com, go check it out. Social Explorer. I've been finding a lot of sites lately where data from sources like the U.S. Census and other social data are coming together and being graphically represented. Social Explorer is a fantastic site that takes information that goes as far back as 1940 and makes a lot of visual representational data available in a very easy-to-browse format. The Open Architecture Network, their byline is Improving Living Standards Through Collaborative Design. The idea is that open source is being applied to all these different ideas. You can see it in Creative Commons, for example, with all sorts of media, photography, etc. We've talked about that several times. The Open Architecture Network is specifically about open design in regards to architecture. We also have a link about semantics and structure in HTML. It's a great little essay about the idea of well-structured HTML. The reason that's important is because chances are your document that you make in HTML is going to end up staying around for a while. And when it does, you want it to be prepared to be able to be brought into another structure later, another document structure later. And you don't know what that document structure might be yet. It might be a cell phone. It might be a form of HTML that we're not aware of yet. And so if you use good semantic markup, which this site will help you to learn about, you'll have your document will be better prepared for those future uses. The My Life Bits project is a Microsoft sub-project which deals with the recording of your life. And it involves things like scanning every piece of paper that comes through your hands. And there have been other aspects of it, such as having sort of like a webcam over your shoulder as you walk through your life during the day. The My Life Bits project, very interesting. TED, the Technology, Entertainment, and Design Conference. It's described as a conference that, quote-unquote, keeps the pulse of what's next and tracks how some of the coolest minds in the world are feeling. One particular take on it was David Pogue, one of my favorite technology writers. He's a technology analyst for the New York Times, and he noted how many of the talks were about the quick oncoming death of the human race. It was almost like a sub-theme of the Technology, Entertainment, and Design Conference, and that might seem strange, considering that entertainment is the middle part of that phrase, but a lot of the greatest thinkers of our time are really concerned about what we're doing to the planet. And finally, there is a link about a gentleman who decides to embed RFID tags in his hands and some of the unique uses he has for those RFID tags. For those of you who might not know, RFID or radio frequency ID tags are little transmitters that have certain bits of information, such as a serial number or a identification tag. It might have your first name and your last name. In this gentleman's case, he is able to identify himself to objects as he walks up to them. It's pretty amazing stuff. How about you, Brian?
Well, one thing I want to talk about is a Turkish blogger who has put together an eye-catching and innovative resume by putting it in Google Earth. He assigned color-coded place marks for each area of his experience and then filled in each one with relevant information. He exported those markers into a Google Earth file, and the result is those place markers not only show information about him, but also where each one of his experience took place. It's rather interesting, and even Gizmodo picked up on it and recently published a post about it. So you can check that out through the link in the show notes. Another thing I'd like to talk about is a project called Bumrush the Charts, which can be found at bumrushthecharts.com. The Bumrush the Charts podcast and component blog are trying to convince a large number of people to download the song Mine Again by indie group Black Lab on March 22nd. The goal is to make an indie band the number one download on Apple's iTunes store, if just for one day, to show the RIAA the power of the people and to demonstrate that bands no longer need the clout of the major record labels to back them. Black Lab was chosen as the subject of this social project because the band has already been dropped by two major record labels and then had to fight to reclaim its own music. This has also become a fundraiser of sorts, with BRTC having signed up as an iTunes Store affiliate, so that every commission made on the sale of Mine Again will be donated to college scholarships, courtesy of a partnership with the Student Loan Network's Financial Aid podcast. Black Lab itself has also pledged to donate 50% of their earnings to the scholarship fund. So keep an eye on the blog for that, and look at some related links in the show notes for more information. And lastly, I want to talk about the campaign to save internet radio. As many of you might know, or have seen on the Technology and the Arts blog, internet radio is being seriously threatened by a new royalty fee schedule that has been proposed by the federal government's Copyright Royalty Board. A couple of webcasters that have been mentioned on recent Technology in the Arts podcasts, University of Pennsylvania's WXPN and Pandora.com, are directly affected by this ruling and are among the leaders in the fight against it. In fact, both Roger LeMay of XPN and Pandora founder Tim Westergren, whose interview with Technology in the Arts can be heard in our February 21st podcast, are quoted in a March 14th CNNMoney.com story. If you want to know more about this issue, please see the Save Internet Radio post on our blog and visit the links provided there as well. Just know that if you have enjoyed discovering new music through internet radio services like Pandora, well, those services might be forced to shut down because of this new royalty rate schedule. So join the fight to save internet radio by going to our website and learning more about the issue. And now, introducing a new feature to our podcast, the Technology and the Arts Events Calendar.
Here is your Technology and the Arts Events Calendar. Color by Numbers is a 72-meter-high light installation in Stockholm, Sweden, that can be controlled by anyone via telephone and viewed online at www.colorbynumbers.org. The exhibit runs through March 31st. Animated Gestures, three recent interactive drawing installations by pioneering new media artist Camille Utterback, is being presented by Art Interactive in Cambridge, Massachusetts, now through May 14th. For more information about Animated Gestures, visit artinteractive.org or call 617-498-0100. Please remember to visit the events page on the Technology and the Arts website at techarts.wordpress.com for more information about these and other events.
Now it's time for our dialogue segment, in which we hear from those who work with technology and art on an everyday basis. This time out, we'll hear from New Jersey singer-songwriter Christian Beach, who is putting the finishing touches on his first solo CD. While he has tried to make this new CD sound as organic as possible, Christian still uses technology quite a bit. Brian, why don't you tell us more about Christian Beach?
Sure, John. Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I'd like to say that Christian Beach and I have been friends since our high school days. In fact, as he mentions in the interview we were about to hear, I met him when I was brought in by a mutual friend of ours to play keyboards in a band called The White Noise. After the mutual friend left the band, Christian and I continued to work together, and we each started accumulating an array of synthesizers, samplers, drum machines, and sequencers. We then started working on a new age project when we were introduced to an Asbury Park-based rapper. So we took all these electronic instruments and backed up this rapper in an outfit called TMC and the New Generation, which I guess you could describe as Depeche Mode meets Run DMC. Anyway, in the early 90s, I left the band and lost contact with Christian for a while, until he made some waves with a band called Slave of Id, when the single What Does It Mean to You started receiving pretty heavy airplay on local radio station 106.3 WHDG-FM in Eatontown, New Jersey. A few years later, Slave of It transformed into Artists That Kill, which produced an EP called Freedom to Obey, and received airplay on local radio station 95.9 WRAT-FM, with the songs Prisoner and Regret. While both Slave of It and Artists That Kill had a sound that put them more in the alt-industrial genre, Christian's next band in the early part of this decade, Ton of Bricks, had a more traditional rock sound, which can be heard on their EP, Have a Nice Life. More recently, though, Christian has abandoned the band concept and has been working on acoustic-based material in the mold of the traditional singer-songwriter. The results of this transformation will soon be heard on his first solo acoustic CD, which is just about finished. However, Christian invited me to his studio recently and took some time to talk about his musical evolution and about the technology he used to record, mix, and master his new CD. Plus, he was kind enough to perform one of his new songs, Poet of the Great Plains. So without further ado, here is my interview with my good friend, singer-songwriter Christian Beach.
Christian, thank you for inviting me to your studio and for doing this interview for Technology and the Arts. Why don't we start out by having you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
I've been obsessed with music, I guess, since I was a kid. My father is a musician, so I think I learned a lot from him. Not necessarily, and I wasn't a musician until, I guess, when I was about 11 or 12 years old, and picked up a guitar. Took lessons maybe for a couple months, but that was about it. It took me a long time to figure out what I wanted to do musically, how I fit into the whole spectrum of things. Never really considered myself a fantastic musician. I thought I was, you know, basically able to accomplish what I wanted to do within the song structure. Started my first band, which, Brian, you know very well, called The White Noise, it was, in fact. And it was started out as a duo. And then, we had a certain keyboard player come in and help us out.
Christian, why don't we talk about some of the technology you've used in your previous musical incarnations?
Yeah, when I was in high school, I guess around my senior year, I was working with technology, drum machines and samplers and things like that. You know, I was about 17 years old, 16 or 17 at the time, I guess. And, you know, at that age, you kind of feel rebellious. So I guess it was kind of my punk, you know, at that point. And there was bands who were kind of, you know, juxtaposing technology into like this punk, pseudo-punk format, which I thought was kind of cool at the time. And so, yeah, I did some demos with that technology. Pretty much myself, and I branched out and actually formed a band called Slave of It. And, you know, we were pretty big on the shore circuit at that time. There wasn't too many bands doing that type of music. But, yeah, it was pretty angry, very raw. You know, there wasn't much, I don't want to say content or musicality to it, but it was pretty much focused on the rawness and in a live setting. So that, you know, after Slave of It, kind of took a hiatus from music for a while. And then Artists That Kill was another band, which was actually another incarnation of Slave of It, almost the same people, same musicians who are actually close friends of mine. And my father was actually in the band as well. My father's a really good guitar player. So same thing. You know, we played the Jersey Shore circuit. You know, it was pretty modest. And I, at that point, I was really confused musically. I felt that I didn't really have any roots per se. I felt like I really, you know, I wasn't listening to, you know, I was listening to stuff that didn't have any kind of solid foundation, you know, and I wanted to kind of get back to that foundation. I grew up in the 80s, you know, and the music of the 80s was very disposable. You know, it was this kind of colossal production. A lot of those bands were, you know, it was just a lot of drum machines, you know, not very much dynamics. I mean, it was cool and everything, but, I don't know, I guess I was kind of going back to why I wanted to get into music in the first place. So I started a band. I started a rock band called Ton of Bricks that, you know, I also realized that a band to me was kind of more of a matter of convenience than anything. You know, I felt like, you know, I wanted to have a band so they would back me up, you know, play my songs. And that doesn't quite go over very well when you have other musicians who you know, have their own agendas and you know, who want to write and which is great, but my focus was really, you know, writing songs. And, you know, so I just, when I was in Ton of Bricks, I started writing songs, just stripping everything down, writing on acoustic guitar and piano. And originally, that's the way I just wanted to keep it. I just wanted to have a separate project, completely separate focus, which was just song-based material, just guitar and vocal, because vocal was really the centerpiece of the music, along with the melodic content. So got out a ton of bricks, and that basically became my main focus. And then kind of spawned off some other ideas as far as how I wanted the songs to sound. I was listening mostly, over the past several years, I was listening to a lot of older music, a lot of music from the 60s and 70s, a lot of Dylan, the band, even going back to Hank Williams. And I realized that country music was really fascinating to me. I thought Hank Williams was an amazing songwriter and just very raw, but incredible ideas with minimal instrumentation. And his songwriting was just excellent. So I that was kind of a pretty big inspiration for me. And as far as my vocal abilities, I kind of catered towards that genre, kind of towards that format, which kind of was a bit country, a bit gospel. I'm not sure how that came out, but it just came out. A lot of the music that I was listening to, and it was just true to my heart. So I just kind of went with it.
So what can listeners expect from this new CD?
There's a couple, you know, a few different feels to it. There's several songs that are have more complex arrangements with more instruments. It's pretty much so stripped down. Several songs I wanted to have a very live feel to it, so I went in and did it. There's about three or four tracks which are just vocal, piano, guitar, and piano, played not to disc, because I wanted to keep that feel to it. I feel that music, you know, you listen to a lot of music these days, and it's just very, you know, everything just sounds the same. I don't think there's much inspiration or vibe in the music that there was, let's say, in the 60s or the 70s. As much technology as you have, it's very hard to replicate that kind of sound. You know, it's like there's nobody who's going to put out a record like Sgt. Pepper, and that was done on a 4-track, no matter how much computer technology you have. But, you know, the computer is great because it allows you the flexibility, and it allows musicians to afford this technology. And, you know, if you spend some time cutting your teeth on it, you know, and you'll, you know, as far as from an engineering perspective, you'll get a pretty good product.
Christian, you started going into it, but why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your studio setup and some of the technology you've used to record this CD?
The Nucleus is the Apple G5. We were previously working with the G4. In fact, we upgraded our equipment in the midst of the project. So we got our G5, and we transferred everything over to from the G4 to the G5. And we also upgraded our interface. So we were previously working in a lower resolution. We're working in 24-bit, but we're working in 48 kilohertz. Now we've upgraded to 96 kilohertz. And it just seems to be, have a little more sparkle to it. But in the mastering process, we'll be able to group everything together so it all sounds uniform. The main centerpiece, I think, is our universal audio cards, which are DSP cards. So they basically relieve the Mac processor of its duties and perform sophisticated algorithms with the DSP cards. So what's great about them is that they emulate vintage hardware processors, equalizers, you know, Pultec equalizers, vintage compressors, hardware that you would never be able to afford. So I could run, you know, 10 or 15 compressors between the two cards that I have. If you went and bought the hardware versions, they're like, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 a piece. You know, I have a emulation of a Fairchild compressor, and it actually looks like the Fairchild. I mean, if you bring it up on the screen, it's an exact replication of it. And, you know, you couldn't find one of those for less than $50,000. And to have that kind of sound is pretty amazing. And it's great to deal with that kind of sophistication, you know. And now that the technology has gotten to a point where it really is an amazing emulation of the hardware. So that's the main thing. Technology-wise, of course, there's the, you know, we have the interface. The mixing console, we're using a Mackie control surface, which interfaces with the computer via MIDI interface, and that allows hands-on mixing. So instead of, you know, sitting there being frustrated trying to mix with a mouse, you have hands-on abilities to do it, just like you would an analog mixer.
And what about the software you're using?
Sure, the applications. We're using Digital Performer 5.0. And I just stuck with that program. I was using it for a long time. Really like the way it's. I like the interface. I like the mixing console. It's easy to get around. It has such unbelievable array of features that I probably utilize maybe 10% of the application, if that. That's pretty much what I use. But what's great about the software is that you can use it as a standalone tape recorder, or you can really get in depth with audio scrubbing, splicing waveforms, and a lot of complex kind of things. I mentioned the Universal Audio Cards, the software is the plugins. For mastering, which I'm attempting to do some mastering myself, because the budget of this project is not astronomical, of course. So, plus I want to gain some experience on the mastering side. We're using Isotopes Ozone in combination with Peak, Bias Peak. Ozone has a lot of features to it. It's got a equalizer. It has multiband compression. So all the essential mastering features, and it has a maximizer to, raise the overall volume of the CD. So those are the major applications that we're using. All the plugins. There's other plugins that I use. There's a vintage warmer plugin that's really cool, which emulates tape saturation. So I'll usually put that on the 2-bus or for mastering to give it more of like an analog kind of sound, more saturation, because digital can sound kind of shrill. So these plugins do a better job of, creating kind of bad harmonics distortion, which we consider warm, odd harmonics, that sort of thing, which is missing in digital. That's what's great is that, you're able to kind of emulate that without going back to the analog domain. You can get that same kind of sound with digital.
Christian, you're one of many musicians that have a MySpace music site. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what MySpace has meant to you as an artist and to countless other independent musicians?
I think MySpace is great. I was hesitant on joining because when I first heard of MySpace, I'm like, well, it's just kind of like this, quasi-dating, site where a bunch of people get together, which is cool. Don't get me wrong. I don't really get involved with that kind of stuff. But the MySpace music is pretty amazing. I mean, the fact that, MySpace has become so huge and it's become really a standard in how people communicate now, I think that, it really opens a lot of doors. It really exposes a lot of people who otherwise would not be exposed to your music. What's also great about it is that, an artist really doesn't have to have a website anymore. They can just have their MySpace site. And, their main site is almost secondary. Everybody will go to the MySpace site because it has all the essentials. It has your schedule when you're performing, when you're touring, people comment, everything is there. Everything is there. And I think that's great. I kind of maybe the downside is that it might be oversaturated. So I think that, I'm kind of guilty of this too. When you get a friend, it's like you want to try to spend time to listen to their music, but sometimes it gets kind of difficult. So overall, it's great, but, it has become oversaturated to a point. But I think quality, overrules everything. So I haven't really hit it too hard, to be honest. I haven't been out there. I mean, I know people who add like 1,000 friends a day. I'm not at that point. I just don't have the time to do that. Eventually, when the CD comes out, I'm sure I'll have to improve the MySpace site, which is not the greatest, but eventually get better, hopefully.
So you've performed and recorded with bands Slave of Id, Artists That Kill, Ton of Bricks. How do you feel right now putting the CD out with Christian Beach on it and going out there and performing as Christian Beach?
It's like a breath of fresh air. It's really what I wanted to do. I mean, all of the artists that, I've been more into artists than bands per se. Like my favorite artists, Bob Dylan and Peter Gabriel, Van Morrison, it's just like that's the forum that I've always kind of wanted to be in. So that's, I feel that, where I should be. Also, there's a lot of flexibility there. If you're in a rock band, you have two guitars, maybe a keyboard player, you have a drummer, bass player, and you have to adjust your songs into that genre where, okay, well, when I have, the song kind of has more of a jazzy feel to it. I want marimbas on the song. Okay, well, who's going to play the marimbas? Not that you can replicate all this live, but there's a lot more freedom there. And I've always been into those albums that, the artist kind of, works kind of like almost not lo-fi necessarily, but almost just like kind of a rougher record. And that's what I wanted to do with this particular project. I mean, not to say that I wouldn't go in with a live band and record, which I would like to at some point on another record. But you know, it just really fit the songs. Like I said, I mean, they started out strictly acoustic, you know, just piano, vocal, guitar, and vocal. Some we kept as is, and some of it we added a few musicians. But it was also cool to work with other musicians. I worked with Gary Mazzarapi, who has worked with the Les Paul Trio. He's worked with Norah Jones. He was kind enough to come in and play in a couple of tracks, play upright bass. I've had Rob Angelo come in, do drums, who's a really great drummer. He's worked with tons of artists and bands in the Jersey Shore area. And my father, who's a multi-instrumentalist, played mandolin, also played bass guitar on a lot of the stuff, and some banjo here and there. And John Pfeiffer, who played lead guitar, slide guitar. So I didn't want to do everything myself. I played piano, acoustic guitar. I played drums on several songs, and you know, keyboards. I tried to even keep the keyboards kind of you know, real kind of stripped down, just organ, accordion. That's kind of the vibe I wanted to put out.
What plans do you have right now to support your new CD?
The first thing I'm going to do is we're going to press a limited number of copies, which are just going to be basically for promotion. I'm going down to Nashville in April, and we're going to do some shows down in Nashville because I just figured it's Nashville, Hank Williams. You know, I just feel it's appropriate. So I wanted to go down there for a few days, and I've never been down there. And I know it's you know, a musical mecca. I know you've been down there, Brian, and have told me great things about it. You know, I'm going to do that. And then when I get back, it's basically going to be some mostly acoustic performances. And then we're just going to kind of build up from there, you know, and we're going to eventually probably get a band together. But at this point, I don't really see the point. You know, I think that the songs can be represented, you know, the way they are, just acoustically. And then as we progress with things, I'm sure we'll assemble a band, you know, with the right players.
Christian, what goals have you set for yourself in your musical career? What do you hope to achieve in the future?
Yeah, my goals have always pretty much been the same. I mean, I'm still making music, you know. The record industry is you know, kind of, it's hard to tell what's going on. You know, things are kind of ambiguous right now. It's certainly not the way it used to be in the 60s or the 70s or even before that, where, you know, an artist would get this, you know, humongous record advance and, you know, they would be signed on to for like 10 records and have this, you know, this career. I mean, it's a tumultuous, you know, industry. That's just the way it is. So the way I look at it is, as far as goals go, my goal is to get the CD done, to get it mastered, and then to support it by playing shows and, you know, getting the whole package together. You know, there's a lot of stuff we need to do still, so it's definitely keeping me busy. I hardly sleep anymore, so that's I'm sure you can relate to that.
Well, not to keep you up any later, would you mind playing something for us to close out this interview?
This is a song kind of inspired by one night when I saw Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I wanted to write sort of a, you know, spaghetti-style Western song, Two Outlaws, but there's love involved, too. It's called The Poet of the Great Plains. It goes like this.
From a schoolboy to a rattlesnake, I made the history books. Found a strawberry blonde-haired girl who had the best of looks. We're the modern day Jesse James. Time is money, baby, let's get away. But tonight, it'll work out alright. She was the waitress at Marco's Cafe. Said she was a writer, but she didn't have that much to say. Modern day of the American dream. Busting tables for a dime, ain't what I mean. But tonight, it'll work out alright. You are my poet of the great plains. You're courageous and you'll always be mine. You are my poet of the great plains. You're my girl and my partner in crime. Gone on the black Chevrolet down Highway 203. Being as reckless as I could ever be. We crashed hard into a ravine. The neighbors tried to help us, so it seems. But tonight, it'll work out alright. Little did we know they got the hammer on the scene. He killed more men than we both could ever dream. It all got leaked down to the vents. Our family's back home, I'm planning our funeral beds. But tonight, it'll work out just right. You are my poet of the great plains. You're courageous and you'll always be mine. You are my poet of the great plains. You're my girl and my partner in crime. All along we had a traitor on our hands. We slowed down in our stolen Ford sedan. Leaves shimmered in the bright open sky. The bullets rattled as we passed them by. But tonight it'll work out just right. You are my poet of the great plains. You're courageous and you'll always be mine. You are my poet of the great plains. You're my girl and my partner in crime.
That was great, Christian. Thank you very much for your time, and good luck with the new CD.
That was a great interview, Brian, and a fantastic performance, Christian. Thank you very much, both of you.
I want to thank Christian myself. He's real busy lately, and he was kind enough to take the time for that. So I can't wait to see him play some live shows around here once he gets back from Nashville. Go check him out. He's really good. But right now, it looks like we're at the end of another Technology and the Arts podcast. John, anything you would like to share with the audience?
I just want to say that if you know of a story, have any ideas, feedback, if you know about shows having to do with technology and the arts, contact us. Email us at technology.arts@gmail.com or come to the blog, leave a comment, participate.
Well, that closes the curtain on another Technology and the Arts podcast. Stay tuned for more news, interviews, and resources related to technology and the arts when we come back with our next show, which will be posted at techarts.wordpress.com on Wednesday, April 4th, 2007. Keep an eye on the Technology and the Arts blog for information about our guest for that podcast. So until then, for Technology and the Arts, this is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemazny. Take care.
For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at techarts.wordpress.com.